welcome to Parents Perspective. On a recent Parents Perspective program, we interviewed four middle school students. Stephanie, Zach, Renee, and Noah discussed substance abuse pressures and issues among their peer groups. They gave adults some suggestions for dealing with middle schoolers as well. They also helped formulate some questions they'd like to ask an adult expert on substance abuse in middle school. So thanks to Stephanie, Zach, Renee, and Noah, we have a lot to discuss today. I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest helps families with these kinds of issues. Gretchen Krumpf is a prevention specialist working with students, faculty, and parents through the Family Support Center in Bethesda, Maryland for the past 15 years. She's now the director of training for the center, which serves the independent school community and public schools as well. Gretchen is the mother of three young adults, two daughters, and a son. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Gretchen.
Thank you. It's nice to be with you today.
What are some ways parents can prevent middle school-aged youngsters from experimenting with drugs or alcohol?
You know, I think what's really ideal for parents and kids is to have a good relationship and the ability to talk to one another well. And that starts long before they're in middle school. I think kids having an opportunity to be responsible and participants in the family, having good family meals and structure, the kids have rules and know how they can contribute, helps them prevent experimenting with substances when they get to middle school.
That's a lot of goals for parents.
Right. Well, I think that communicating with your kids and being able to share information freely is key. Listening to our kids is much a part of communicating, not always talking. The two ears and one mouth. Mm-hmm. So listening to our kids and being able to share information with each other, whether it's something that they're learning in school or is on the news or even in a television show and then talking about it, can help educate kids about what's out there that they might be confronting. And also helping them to reduce peer pressure by being able to talk about what they might confront and then role-playing ways that they can stay safe.
So it sounds like asking leading questions is a good way to start the conversation.
I think that that's really important. And also sharing information, being able to read the same thing and talk about it, takes the parents out of the needing to be an expert hot seat. If there's something in a magazine or on television or in the newspaper about a situation or a substance abuse issue, and having a chance to read it and talk about it with their kids, asking them what they think about it, and if that were them, what would they do differently? Facilitating the conversation or looking for a teachable moment where you may be watching a program or a movie and then asking the kids what they think about it and what they would do. Would they do it the same way or would they do something differently?
Which is sort of counterintuitive because we all want to jump in there and say, don't do this.
Yes.
Don't try this at home. Don't do this. Don't do that.
And that goes to the rules part. I think that it's really important for parents to be clear about their own values and family values around substances. In our family, we do not want our children to drink alcohol or use drugs. Or we use medications when we're sick, but you don't go into the medicine cabinet and help yourself. So it's a family value system around that and communicating clear parameters for kids, talking about what they may be exposed to, but also being clear about what our family's values are about that. And again, great dinner time conversation. I think parents have to be really clear about their own personal values. My husband and I had a lot of conversations about how we felt about alcohol and drugs and talking about that with our kids so that we were aligned as opposed to the dad thinks this, mom thinks that, and kids will divide and conquer pretty quickly. So I do think that parents talking about it and then having a joined view that they communicate to their kids helps the kids so much.
I think the way you're suggesting to talk to kids, our family does it this way, we do it this way in our home, rather than you do this.
Because.
Totally different approach.
What about the unforeseen circumstances that always come up? Now, you talked about role-playing a little bit. Are there any other ways to help our kids get through those things that come up that we didn't expect to happen.
Well, I think one of the greatest things about this age group, and we're talking 6th, 7th, and 8th grade middle schoolers, and as I said, start early. So when they're in 4th and 5th grade, these conversations can begin. One of the things I like to do with kids, I've done it with my own, and I do it with a lot of students I work with, is the who, what, when, and where. And it's a great round-the-table conversation. Is who do you think you might encounter that would offer you something? What would they offer you? And let them brainstorm what that could be. And when would that happen? How old do you think you might be? And then, well, where could that happen? And have the kids share and do it around the table. And then say, okay, so let's take it and break it down. What do you think, who would it really be? And frequently, it's somebody that you know, maybe an older brother or sister, or a cousin, or a neighbor, maybe the babysitter, as opposed to some stranger in an alley downtown. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily going to be heroin or crack, but it would be alcohol at a family party, or at a celebration, or at a barbecue, or at a slumber party. So the kids have a sense that they're going to be confronting things, and they're very capable of making healthy choices for themselves. I think it's really helpful for parents to empower their kids. They're not going to be there when this comes up. And so their kids need to be empowered. And kids do a whole lot better when they're empowered than when they're told, just don't.
It's interesting, though, when we talk to the middle schoolers, they were very certain about how they didn't like drugs and they didn't like alcohol and all this kind of stuff. But there are an awful lot of studies that show there's a tipping point, so to speak, a time when the attitudes change for whatever reason. How do we deal with that when they're middle schoolers? They're going to say, or fourth graders or something, they're going to say, oh, yes, yes, I'm not going to do any of that. Mm-hmm. And yet, when they get to be 10th graders,
they're confronted with it far more often. I think that middle school is such a transitional time, and we do see in our country where kids begin to experiment in middle school frequently. Experimenting, trying it on, trying a cigarette, sipping a beer, taking a beer out of the refrigerator. And frequently it is when they're in groups of kids, slumber parties or going to a dance. The media is giving them all sorts of messages. And as they move from middle school into high school, that eighth grade transition time, they may be leaving the school where they've gone since they were in kindergarten. They may be going from a single-sex school into a co-ed situation. There's a whole host of issues for girls as they're moving into high school, becoming exposed to older boys and girls more quickly than boys going into ninth grade, we see. But alcohol works. I mean, it's very prevalent in our culture to have alcohol at our celebrations and our homes. Kids aren't social drinking. So that's another piece that I talk with middle schoolers about frequently, is about the effects of alcohol on the body, but also the impact of binge drinking, because I think our kids get a message that you need to drink a lot and quickly. And kids experimenting don't know their capacity. And so that's why we like to talk with kids in those ages about the real facts about it, so that they know. Because if they're educated, then they'll be aware of what's in front of them. And then they're still kids. But before you know it, they're getting their permit, and then they've got driver's licenses, or they've got friends who can drive. They begin to date. And they may date somebody from a different school than the one that they go to. And their job is growing away from us. It's our job as parents to be constantly vigilant, to be listening to our kids, but also be paying attention to their lives. In middle school, our kids want to separate a little more from us. In high school, they'd like us to live in a different state. But we need to stay plugged in. We need to know who their friends are. And we need to know who their friends' parents are. We need to stay involved in school. And frequently we go back to work after we've gotten them through elementary school. We aren't calling to see if the parents are planning to have them overnight for a slumber party. Being able to consistently make that call can give your kids so much support. We just have to stay plugged in. And if it is the norm, our kids take it with much more stride than us trying to enforce it when they're in 9th or 10th grade. So for us, we parents, we can maintain that through elementary school into middle school. We're much better prepared, and our kids know we're just going to do it. We're going to call and check in and know if the parents are there and if we can bring something or send something.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on substance abuse among middle school-aged children.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We're talking with Gretchen Krampf about substance abuse among middle schoolers.
Well, let's just say there's been a little bit of yielding to some peer pressure. How can parents recognize warning signs of use of drug or alcohol?
That's such a great question. You know, I think parents know their kids really well, and if parents are paying attention, they may notice a few things. A change in friends. If all of a sudden your kids aren't hanging around with the same group of kids they've been with for a while, they've got new friends, that could be a signal that they're hanging out with kids who use, and their other friends may not, so they've stepped away from that setting. You'll notice a change in sleeping patterns. Now, adolescents are in a lot of flux, but if you're seeing changes in sleeping, and also if they're isolating themselves more, staying in their room more, again, you know, teenagers will do that, but being a little more vigilant, eating habits, sleeping patterns, isolation, change in friends, watching the grades. How are they doing in school? Are they struggling with that class because they need extra academic help, or just they don't care? I mean, and that can create the apathy of experimenting, can create apathy with schoolwork.
If we find that our middle schooler has been experimenting with drugs or alcohol to our horror and shock, then what do we do? The impulse, I'm sure, is to say, you should be ashamed of yourself. How terrible. What are you doing? But obviously that's not the best way to do this. What do we do?
Right. I think as parents, we feel out of control when we think our kids are at risk. And we can try and over-control when we're feeling out of control. It goes back to that listening and communicating piece, asking what's going on in your life. I think parents are really busy, and it can create difficulties if we're not plugged in on a regular basis. And experimenting is different, I think, than regular use.
Well, I wonder whether when you see that your child may be experimenting, is that the slippery slope? Is that the time to marshal all the forces, hoist the flag, and go marching off?
In my own personal experience, for as long as I've been doing this and as long as I talked with my own kids about it, my kids did experiment too. So I can speak to parents from a place of knowing. I think that it's really important to know when, as a family, you can work on this issue and when you need to get some outside help. So when my kids were trying it on, seeing if they were going to have a little latitude, if they could go to a party and come home and have had a beer or two, or they'd been with friends who were smoking and they weren't smoking, I just smell like smoke because I was with my friends who smoke, when in fact they had been trying smoking on, you know, it was the time for the family to come together and have some really good heart-to-hearts and holding those kids a little bit closer. Not the grounded for your rest of your life solution, but I think we need to step back and we need to see how we can sort this out and curtail some of the opportunities where you may be in a place where you could be getting yourself into trouble. So this Friday night, I'd like you to stay home. Your friends are welcome to come over here, but you're not going to be going out. So hold your kids a little bit closer for a while to see if it's something that can be remedied. If they continue to sneak around that, I think it's really important to get some outside help because the communication can break down and it can become a war of parent and child, And so being able to have someone outside the family, a therapist or someone in substance abuse intervention, talk with your child to see if they're experimenting or they're really using early enough can reduce a whole host of things. There are, in many areas, alcohol education programs. And so educating your kid beyond what you know can help them help themselves, and some outside support to intervene before it's a problem.
Are those kinds of programs for a whole family or for the kid, and you say, I want you to go to this thing, and they march off quite willingly?
Well, I work with Family Support Center, and one of the things that we do in many areas have services like this available is they're social workers who are able to sit down with a parent and take a look at what their patterns are and tell them if they think it's a problem that requires a substance abuse intervention, or if it is normal experimentation and maybe some family management issues. Because early in our conversation, we were talking about communication, and when that starts to break down, it's hard to get anything resolved. So that's a simple assessment. Actually, through high school, it worked quite well. My daughters and me especially, we had a wonderful therapist who worked with us who helped us bridge that mother-daughter teenage time. And substances were part of our conversations. So I think that there's a whole host of support in our communities for parenting and also for health and wellness, as opposed to it becoming something really severe.
What if you're at a point where that's really not helping? How do you know if you should look into residential treatment for a child?
Again, you know, doing this as a first step can lead you to knowing that it's beyond, that it's moved into an addictive state, or there's severe abuse and it can become an addiction. With our kids, that's the key, is their bodies physiologically are developing. And so rather than being in denial that it's not a problem, it's just experimenting and we can let this ride, kids can become addicted much more quickly than adults. So talking with a program, most hospitals have something they can refer you to. There are adolescent programs with inpatient treatment and intervention services and outpatient support. Talk to the professionals, talk with them about your family situation, have your adolescent assessed, and let the professionals decide if, in fact, an inpatient treatment would be the appropriate way to go. Our children's main occupation is to grow, to develop emotionally, intellectually, spiritually, physically, and substances in middle school and high school are detrimental to that. So parents, the best thing they can do is intervene in a timely fashion and not let it ride.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on substance abuse among middle school-aged kids.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $10 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Gretchen Krompf about substance abuse among middle schoolers.
Do you think advertising plays a role in this?
You know, when I work with kids, we talk a lot about their teenage pop culture, and advertising is key. Where have we seen cigarette commercials and ads move to? You know, the pages of our fashion magazines, they're still there. They're off the billboards on the highway, but they've moved from television. And kids are media savvy, very, very media savvy. They have popular television shows. And when I talk with them and ask them what they learn from those shows, how is it to be a teenager? You know, the most popular show right now with kids tends to be The O.C. And there's a lot of partying and there's a lot of drama and there's a lot of sex. And the parents, the adults, just tend to be in a different orbit altogether. The kids tell me it's the teenagers who seem to be in control of the situation. I think it's a great show for kids and parents to watch together. Parents being quiet and watching, and then asking their kids what they think, because this contemporary show is showing kids how to be a teenager in America right now. And they have all sorts of different perspectives, but kids will talk about what they see. And if parents can be present for their films or for their television shows or their music and hear what the kids listen to without laying judgment down on top of it, staying open to the conversation, being parental, but also being open to listen as their kids move into high school, they can learn so much.
It's very hard to be non-judgmental.
It's and tough.
It's a challenge, but I think we have to.
And what I think with kids and parents is the discernment. I mean, if our kids get all their information from their peer group, they all have the same information. I think kids benefit from having other adults in their lives who are not their parents mm-hmm. that they can talk to. And one of the things we've talked about, too, is having safe people. When I work with kids in middle school moving into early high school, when they may begin to be exposed to situations where they would have to make a decision for themselves, we talk about ways they can set up safe scenarios through role-playing in middle school. Who is a safe person? Or what is a code that we can use? If my kids found themselves in a situation where there wasn't a parent at home, they'd gone to a party, we checked to see, the parents had gone out for dinner for a couple hours, knowing they'd be back about 9:30. Our family rules were they couldn't be there if parents weren't home. So rather than having to call and say, you've got to come and pick me up because the parents aren't here, and being embarrassed, we had a code in the family. My daughter would say, Mom, can you come pick me up? I've got a headache, and it's really bad. I need to come home now. And that was code for, I don't want to have a conversation about what's going on here. It's just come and pick me up. So I think with our kids, if parents can set up a code with their kids, that can give them an out.
Gretchen, what's your take on how parents should set an example by their use of alcohol and medications and so forth? How can parents model in a healthy way?
We talked earlier about having conversations, parent-to-parent conversations about our values and what we want to communicate with our kids. Kids really follow the examples that we set. It's a, do as I say, not as I do. If parents are coming home and the first thing they do is pop a beer or open a bottle of wine because they've had a stressful day, our kids read that message. Or if we're constantly popping a pill to take care of a headache or an ache or a pain, our kids follow that example. I think it's mindfulness as parents. If we can be mindful of how we are and how we act, how we treat health and wellness in our families, we're going to guide our children far better. We live in a country with a culture around alcohol being part of our celebrations, and many adults do drink. It's not inappropriate to explain to our kids that adults can drink, and these are the reasons why. Our bodies are more mature. We aren't having to spend as much time in school, developmentally, etc. But I think that one of the awarenesses that my husband and I had was, if we are going to be telling our kids not to drink and we continue to have alcohol at every function that they go to, it's not going to set the best example. So when we would have things, especially parties for them, alcohol wasn't a part of that. When we would have a soccer gathering at the end of the season, when we were going to have a time when kids and adults were together, it was really important to be mindful of that.
I remember a situation in one of the schools not too many years ago where the kids, I guess, were serving alcoholic beverages to the parents at an adult function. Mm-hmm. But they were using the kids, the students, to do this. Right. And there was a big uproar, and I think the practice stopped.
That's an element of the preparing for the drug-free years training, is for parents to realize that when you have a child open your beer or light a cigarette for you, you are including them in substance abuse use, and it does send a really negative message. So parents should not have their kids tending bar at a party at home. They shouldn't be having them pass wine and cocktails. It's really important to separate our kids out of those adult activities, yes.
We always like to leave our listeners with some resources that they can use to follow up on what we've discussed here. Do you have some suggestions?
Oh, sure. I think that every area will have parenting programs available. So talk to your local school or community centers to see what parent programs may be available. Frequently for middle school and high school parents, they deal with substance abuse educational issues, and the PTAs also have information on that. At home, one of the best things to do is just go online if you're computer savvy. There's some great resources available. Clearinghouse information. One of my favorites is www.talkwithkids.com. org. It's a part of the Kaiser Family Foundation, and they have really great resources. Another one, and we see their television commercials frequently, is www.theantidrug, because parents are the anti-drug. And we've also got the National Clearinghouse for Drug and Alcohol Information, a great site, and you can order resources. It's www.health.org, O-R-G.
What do you think about the alcohol companies, the beverage companies, putting out websites and advertisements and stuff about safe drinking?
And promoting a lot of our sporting events and our concerts, right? Well, you know, it's again, I talk with kids about media savvy and brand awareness, and those things are being done to create new users. I mean, they want loyal brand. It's all about branding. And so we start young. Most people who are 30 or 40 have decided what kind of wine or beer they're going to drink. So we're looking at who our next customers are going to be. And so they've been contributing more to the safe drinking campaign. But no drinking is the safest drinking. And under the age of 21, it's illegal to drink. So I think our kids being aware of what the consequences are and what the health risks are is key. I'd like to see more funding go to prevention training, which starts when they're in elementary school.
Well, we have had a wonderful conversation with a lot of information for parents to digest, and we want to thank you, Gretchen Kramp, for being with us today.
This has been great. Thank you both so much.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a help to us. Mention show number 256 when you call, and if you know, tell us what station you're listening to. It's always fun to know what station you're tuning into since we're airing all over the world. Washington, D.C. with Kids is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the Montgomery County Under 21 Activities Fund in Maryland. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.